Twitter.
Blog Talk Radio.
We're asking the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Florida to order an immediate halt to social media companies' illegal, shameful censorship of the American people.
Speaking in New Jersey, Trump's demanding prompt restoration of all his accounts, as well as putting an end to shadow banning. Trump called this a pivotal battle for the First Amendment right to free speech, adding he's confident they will achieve tremendous victory. President Biden is calling the assassination of Haiti's president a heinous act. The White House released a statement where he expressed his best wishes to the late president's wife, who was also shot and is now in the hospital. The country's acting prime minister said the shooting early this morning was carried out by unidentified Spanish-speaking assailants. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
Mattress Firm's 4th of July sale has been extended. Hurry in and get a king bed for the price of a queen or a queen for twins. Plus, get a free adjustable base with qualifying ceiling purchase. Or save $500 on all Tempur-Pedic Breeze mattresses. With our low price guarantee, you can rest assured you'll get the best bed at the best price. Only at Mattress Firm. Offer valid with qualifying purchase. Restrictions apply. Out of participating locations only. For offer details, visit mattressfirm.com/sale.
You've heard of one and done, but what about 100 and done? That's what Lexicon is for attorneys. $100 a month to be done with practice management headaches. Lexicon is a comprehensive software and services solution that helps transform law firms from top to bottom, giving lawyers the ability to focus more on law and less on practice management. We've spent more than a decade helping firms scale and grow while maximizing billable hours and increasing client satisfaction. Let us do the same for you. Lexicon marks the spot. Visit lexiconservices.com to learn more or request a demo.
Let's go ahead and take a look now for alternative talk weather outlook for Wednesday. We'll see some morning clouds, but they'll make way to partly sunny skies by this afternoon. High temperatures a little cooler than what we've been having, around 73, 74. Tonight, partly cloudy skies, low temperatures back down to about 57. For Thursday, partly sunny skies yet again, highs around 75. Mostly clear skies, lows down to about 58 for Thursday night. For Friday and for Saturday, more sunshine expected. High temperatures back on up into the low 80s, with low temperatures in the low 60s.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Had enough of the been there, done that ideas. Tired of too much talk and so little action. Rewind now and welcome to Transformation and Change Radio with Dr. Kathy Aubert, where the vision of true equity, inclusion, courage, and purpose meet powerfully. Dr. Kathy delivers a dynamic, engaging conversation and the most authentically brave dialogue on air today. This hit show will challenge you to explore current issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion and deepen your capacity to choose courage to speak up to greater inclusion in everything you do. Fasten your seatbelt and accelerate your effectiveness to become a powerful change agent in your life, community, job, and society. Imagine true equity and inclusion and get the tools to really manifest your vision. No frills, no fluff, just really powerful, good stuff. Transformation and Change Radio starts now.
Welcome to Transformation Change Radio. I'm Dr. Kathy Aubert, Center for Transformation Change. I'm very excited about our guest today. We'll be talking about what can we do now, really focusing on white leaders, change agents, allies. How do we partner with other whites, partner with folks of color, indigenous folks to create systemic change? I don't know about you, but I was like, early on in my career, I'm like, I can do this, and I hadn't done the inner self-work and healing I needed. So Dr. Victoria Ferris could not be more excited to partner with you. I was trying to remember, we may have brushed paths, but I remember clearly at the end of NASPA, Student Affairs Conference, you found me, and we had this phenomenal conversation, which left me feeling I wanted to continue living, working, and learning from you. And since then, we've had a chance over several years to work together, but you were in higher ed, in student affairs, really doing full person, full-bodied work and social justice work, and then in 2017, which didn't sound long ago until I counted up over 4 years ago, you started full-time consulting. I am so excited to have you here. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm so excited, too. That, when I stopped you on a corner crossing the street at NASA, and that was over 5 years ago now. It kind of feels like yesterday and also like I've just known you forever.
And I relate as well. And the more I get to know you, I mean, we have some differences, and we'll get to some of those. For instance, your work really at the national level, sitting in, getting arrested at the Capitol. We'll get to that. But for now, could you tell us a bit about yourself? I'd like our listeners to know a bit more about how growing up maybe fueled your work in the world, how you're doing in this pandemic, and over a year since George Floyd was murdered. And so I still want to call it renewed time of racial reckoning, and I am seeing some backslash. There it is. White leaders saying, did I really say I wanted to do anti-racism work? I think I was kidding. So tell us a bit about yourself.
That was the hardest question to start with, I think. But thanks. You know, I grew up, the more I think the older I get, the more into the work I get, the more I raise my own kids, the more I think my parents are really unique and impacted how I see the world and who I am in the world. Because I had parents who were far from perfect, but sort of disruptors in their own right. Like my parents were hippies. My parents didn't like being told what to do. My parents got married kind of young, so they didn't have to live with their parents and be controlled, right? And so I remember super clearly in the late 80s, I was probably 8 or 9 years old, at the dinner table, my parents talking to us about the AIDS crisis and what was true and what was false. And just being very clear, like, people are going to say this and that is not true. And people are going to say this and that is not true. And at the time, you know, you think your parents are just boring and, like, just like everyone else's parents. And now I'm like, my parents were, like, really engaged. And so, again, you know, it's certainly far from perfect. There was a lot of kind of themes of white saviorism in my upbringing, a lot of themes of there was this racist history, but then Martin Luther King sort of saved everything, and now things are different. And I grew up as a young kid right outside of Washington, D.C. in the suburbs in the most, probably the most racially diverse place I've ever lived. And I then in middle school moved to New York and have lived most of my life in the suburbs outside of New York City. And while there's a lot of racial diversity in New York, the socioeconomic implications are pretty profound. And what I noticed about Northern Virginia was that wasn't so. Our houses all looked the same, even where our families looked different. And I think that had an impact, too, in a way that I didn't fully understand because I didn't grow up seeing what I saw when I moved to New York, which was there were black and brown kids in my school, and they lived here, and I lived here, and this person lived here, right? And so I think all of that kind of plays a role. And I've just always been a really curious kid and was told I wore my heart on my sleeve and had rose-colored glasses, which the world tried to take away, and then I found therapy and have reinvited back into my life because I think rose-colored glasses are a moderately good way to live sometimes. And I had a career in higher ed. My mom used to tell people I went to college and I loved it so much that I never left, which was mostly true. I worked my way up managing residence halls and doing student conduct and a lot of student support work. And again, saw firsthand the ways that systemic inequities were impacting students, first-gen students, students of color, queer and trans students, and grew increasingly impatient, as you well know, as an internal change agent. And then when I got my doctorate, my research focused on the role that white folks could play in disrupting systems of racism in the workplace. And the timing just all felt exactly right. What the research I collected felt too big to keep contained in any one place. And I felt like I had been invested into by so many people in such profound ways that I just felt like the next best thing was for me to pay that forward by getting in front of as many people as possible to talk about what was really happening around us in workspaces, in higher education and beyond, and what we could do about it. Then somewhere along there, Trump got elected, and I started getting arrested and really making trouble. And I think have found the power of my own voice in that and the beauty of community in that. And then the pandemic happened. And I would say that at this point, I feel frustrated in a way that I didn't anticipate because I really had a lot of hope. I mean, I remember saying to folks, and probably you were one of them, Kathy, like in August and September, like, this is different. It feels different this time, right? Like, white people are actually in the streets. White people are actually, like, it. And I had a sense of hope that I didn't think was naive, and I still don't think it was, and I think that a lot of those really well-intentioned white folks underestimated what it actually means to put those values into practice, and so that's, I think, where we kind of find ourselves today, right, where I think a lot of folks are still grappling with that, and I find myself grappling with, like, what do we do about that, and how can we support, how can we continue kind of building momentum and rallying folks.
And that might be societally inside organizations. I'm struck that I grew up with very colluding parents, no politics, no social justice conversation, lots of fear-based. So to hear how you folks were interrupting, disrupting some of the homophobic, transphobic dynamics around AIDS and who knows what else. I'm hoping there's more white folks that grew up in families like yours and even the younger folks than you. And I join you with naivete might be it. There were particularly black women who were just shaking their head at me, July, August, September, saying, all right, Kathy, maybe you're right, but we've seen this before, and I was riding that wave. And I do believe individuals have shifted. I have seen organizations shift. But it's going to take a lot more focus. You call yourself in your bio, and I experience you as disruptor, truth teller, justice seeker, working to shine light on truth that can be hard to recognize. And I'm running into white leaders who are doing the, I'm shocked, I'm surprised, I thought things were good, we do our best, how come y'all don't appreciate us? That's lately what I'm hearing. So tell us more about disrupting, especially in this context, truth-telling, and what it might look like for disruptors inside and outside organizations for white-identified folk.
Yeah. You know, I think the word disruption gets a bad rap because we think about it as, like, and don't get me wrong, I like this kind of disruption too, but like shutting down the freeway, right? But disruption also looks like not letting your family dinner have subtle or not so subtle racist connotations and coded language that doesn't get disrupted, right? Disruption for me, I think most consistently looks like inquiring with my kids about how the stories that they're getting at school and how we can wrestle with them differently, right? It looks like me asking my kids pretty regularly, and who do you think told that story? And what version of that story is missing, right? And so I think for me, disruption first happened on a deeply personal level. I was 30 years old. I had a newborn, and I was pregnant, and my mom got cancer, and she died 10 months later. Mm. And it was in that process. I've never felt more vulnerable, right? I don't know that I would have, honestly, had kids, probably certainly not at that time, if I had thought I would be doing it without my mother, right? And so it felt so vulnerable. And I remember so clearly one day my mom said to me, all we have left is authenticity, so mm-hmm. let's just talk about it. And it was so brave, and I think it really landed with me because it did strip away everything else. And when you strip away everything else, the truth is what's there. And what we do with the truth is, to me, what authenticity looks like. And, you know, I think the truth has become weaponized. I mean, we see, like, the 1619 Project, it's been weaponized. And I'm like, the truth doesn't have to mean anything unless we make it mean something. And so for me, I use those words because I've never really known how to lie. Like, as a teenager, I tried it once. It didn't work. Just not in my body. But I think disrupting and truth-telling can be done with profound love and with grace and with compassion and with a warm smile and with love, right? And I think that love is one of the greatest, like, acts of disruption and of justice and of truth-telling. And so I like those words because sometimes you'll find me disrupting in big ways with a loud voice, and sometimes it's just listening and saying, like, I hear you, I've been there, and what can we do different this time? But I think that those are some of the things to me that are core to the world that I want to live in. is people who are willing to wrestle with the truth even when it's painful, and who are willing to show up authentically, like my mom in that moment, even when it is so hard and so vulnerable, that we can recognize that those are the most impactful opportunities.
So why do you think so many of us white people resist truth-telling from folk of color, indigenous folks, discount, dismiss, hear white change agents who are speaking truth to power? I know in my own life I held on to the belief that I was smart and better than, and I had done it by myself, pulled myself by my boots. So why do you think, as you interact with so many white leaders, change agents, folks inside organizations, why are we, as a group, resisting truth, disruption, and seeking status quo comfort?
Well, I think we can't tell ourselves the truth. And I think until we can receive the truth with ourselves, it's very, very difficult. I won't say impossible, but very difficult to receive it from other people. And I think especially difficult to receive it from other people that we've been told aren't as good, smart, worthy, deserving, right? And so... but I think the hardest part is our own willingness to tell the truth, because what you just said is you were taught all these things about yourself, and it has not been a fun path for me. I'm willing to get a state like realizing, like, I didn't pull myself up by anything, right? I had access, I grew up in a zip code, my parents went to college, right? And you know, I also use the example of student loan debt. Like, I have enough student loan debt to own quite a lovely home somewhere, and instead I live in a small apartment and pay Sallie Mae more than I care to. And the reason, and so that doesn't often feel like privilege, right? I think that I hear this narrative, like, I had to work so hard, I'm constantly on the hamster wheel. And the only reason I've had access to that kind of student loan is because my grandparents owned a home and could co-sign on my loans, and my grandparents owned a home because they benefited from the GI Bill, which was deeply racist and provided white families access to public funds, which we don't want to talk about, but, right, and so I think, though, it takes owning the truth about ourselves and the truth that the things we've been taught have been lies, that they've been harmful, that I've caused harm, that I, you know, my ancestors, I'm aware, for generations, my ancestors enslaved people and ran plantations. Anything that I have has come at the expense of so many other people's humanity. And it is painful to sit with that and to recognize it. And I think until we're willing to see the truth in ourselves and for ourselves, we're not going to hear from somebody else. And I think that that's one of the really profound, often invisible ways that whiteness works.
My guess is this is tied to your research, because you really had powerful conversations with folks of color to hear their thoughts, their hopes, what white people need to be doing differently. And my guess is a theme of that is our own self-work and healing work. So we tell ourselves the truth, recognize systemic racism, white supremacy, how we're just have, at least I do still have racist thoughts, white supremacist beliefs that I'm pulling out every day. Could you continue weaving? I don't have to say nothing. You could talk the whole time. But thank you for letting me come in the case. Tell us about a little more about what you found in your research, and particularly what's critical these days for white allies, change agents, and leaders who may not quite be ready to make that shift they need to make.
You know, it's so interesting. I literally this morning published a blog post where I kind of talk about some of this, because my research, so I spoke exclusively to folks of color about their experiences with workplace racism and what they wish their white colleagues and supervisors would do about it. And what came from it was just this extraordinary, like, map. It feels like a roadmap of what allyship, what effective allyship could look like. And when at the time when I was doing my research, most of the research on allyship had been authored by white people. And I, like, fundamentally, philosophically, don't believe that white people define what allyship is, right? That's, like, so self-indulgent. And so what I wanted to do was hear not what I think it should be, but, like, what are the people who are experiencing the harm saying, right? And there was this just real clear path of really understanding. That was, like, a really big takeaway. I wish white people could really understand the pain, the impact, the emotional toll, the physical toll, right? You know, the impact it has on my family, me as a parent, driving home after a day and then, you know, interacting with, having to be mindful of staying safe. Like, I could be working, go to the mall, and nobody's following me around except to try to help me, right? And so this, like, idea of I just wish white people could understand, they could get it. And I wish that they would talk to each other, right? You know, white people love to say to me, this was so racist or this happened, but, like, they don't want to say it to each other, and that's not actually shifting the tide. So some of my biggest takeaways were the lack of meaningful understanding, of emotional understanding, of impact, the sort of self-indulgent way that we, and I do this forever, like, want our black friends and colleagues and coworkers to know that we notice without actually having to take on any consequences or changes in our own lives. And so the big takeaways were, if we're talking about allyship, that looks like a shift in emotional labor. That looks like a shift in, you know, not demanding folks of color be the only ones talking about this, but that we're taking on that labor. So white people interacting with other white people was a big one, and action. So it was meaningful understanding and action. But it's only, I would say, through this past year that I have, in observing some of the things we talked about, this, like, momentum that looked bigger than I had seen previously, and now this backpedaling, that I think I started to connect things I was doing in my personal life, therapy, healing, a lot of deep healing work, after leaving, you know, leading higher ed, working for myself, healing up that hustle culture, capitalism, like all those things, that I think now I see how those two things are connected. That I do think that one of the big missing pieces is we can't intellectualize ourselves out of white supremacy. And I think for the longest time, that's what I wanted to do. That's what I see white leaders want to do. They want to look at a policy. They want to look at the handbook. They want to say what's wrong with it, and they want to change it, but they don't want the lunchroom to feel any different. And they don't want the campus to feel any different, the office to feel any different. They don't want to feel any different. They don't want to live in a different neighborhood. They don't want to show up differently at PTA meetings, right? And I think I don't actually, this is my hunch at this point, but I don't actually think it's because they don't want to, but I think that's where the gap is of telling ourselves the truth, that we can't do that from our headspace. We can only do it when we let ourselves really see the humanity in other people and our own flawed humanity, to be able to want to make it different, to be different.
I could be wrong, but you're having to think about part of that is to really realize we're not smarter, better. We're humans together, and it might even look like this for a while, meaning that folk of color, indigenous folk, actually have far greater competence on how to thrive, survive in the systems we have, how to change them with lots of wisdom. And it's only been relatively recently I've been on a journey to listen to, agree with, follow the leadership of. About a year ago, I was in a workshop, African-American woman who's 15, 17 years younger, and I truly felt in my body what it meant to know I'm not as competent in this moment. In general, she's incredibly competent. I will follow the leadership of, partner with. I've been using those words for a long time, but it's been a painful, continuing journey of really listening to, following leadership of, and I wonder if that's a key for white leaders, white allies, change agents, managers, supervisors, colleagues that are not white allies yet, to really dismantle, and so many can't even use these terms, racist beliefs, white supremacist attitudes, they think it's the KKK, the Nazis. So could you talk a bit about the healing work that you've done, the healing work you do with organizations, what we need to do, what the truth-telling might look like? Because organizations are listening like, all right, I want to do it, but how?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think I everything you said I completely agree with. I think everything I've learned, not everything, but so much of what I've learned about healing, about joy, about community, about authentic relationships, about dismantling systems has come from black women, people of color, and trans folk, right? Because of what you just said, right? There are so many folks who experience so much violence and harm from these systems, and yet figure out how to live with joy and grace and dignity, even in pockets. I don't want to make it. I don't want to glorify that experience because nobody should have to do that. And the fact that those folks can show me what was possible, that the idea that like we shouldn't all have access to abundant joy, to me is a byproduct of white supremacy. And I think that that's an important part of this too. I think that I think for me, it's been important to think about what does liberation look like. And I don't, again, that's not a, I don't know the answer. I look to other people, and what I see in communities that I share space with is liberation looks like joy. It looks like walking down the street and knowing you're safe, and you can do that however you want to, as long as you're not harming somebody else, right? And so when I start to think about those principles, then how do I embody them? But not just how do I embody them, it's like how do I pair that embodiment with the expansiveness that we could all embody them. And I think that, and I did this for a long time, like I think I felt guilty about any privilege that I had or any joy that I had, and like how can I take a weekend off and just like play in the woods with my kids when other people are experiencing, and I'm like, I want everyone to be able to play in the woods with their kids if they want to or whatever, right? And I do think that it's been in recognizing what that community and joy looks like and what liberation can feel like that has helped me feel motivated, because I don't think that being socialized as a white person, that was part of my upbringing to understand. Mm-hmm. And I think it is one of the ways that white supremacy harms white people, because our humanity gets lost in the system too. And so how does that shift into organizations? I think is tricky, and I think the first and biggest and probably hardest part is there is no right way to do it. And, you know, I have that daily chat with myself. Like, you know, I just told you I posted this blog post, and part of that conversation with myself is like, this is my story, and it will resonate or it won't, and some people will disagree, and I will listen, and maybe I'll get better as a result, or maybe we'll just hold space for multiple perspectives. And I don't think that organizations are built to navigate things that way. And I think that what I've seen is folks want an end goal, right? They want to bring in a consultant and say, like, this, and this, and then you have this. And, you know, so often I'll do a workshop or I'll kind of start the work, and I partner often with my colleague, Jen Fry, and we joke, we always keep room in our schedule for the week after our first long workshop, because inevitably the CEO, one of the leaders, is like in a panic and needs to get on our calendar because they're like, people are spinning over here. And we're like, perfect. Right? I think that what I wish folks would get a little bit more on board with is the understanding that this is a process of muddling. And if we could all just get more comfortable muddling together and listening together and not expecting it to be neat and tidy, we could make the process even a little bit fun, because we could laugh at, like, I don't know. And imagine leaving a boardroom where nobody knows the answer, but you just talked about some important things and maybe you made progress and maybe you didn't. Just like that, I mean, just saying that, I can hear the anxiety and like the tension in people's stomachs who have been taught that if you didn't follow the agenda, you didn't have a successful meeting. But I think we have to find the balance of centering the voices and perspectives of those who are most harmed by the system and not demanding it, and creating first a container where folks know that that investment is worthwhile because you're going to do something about it. Because what I'm hearing now is like, you had me at 3 listening sessions, I poured my heart out, and you haven't done anything about it, and that makes this place even more hostile than it was a year ago. So I think the action is essential.
In partnership, following leadership of the folks most harmed hearing. As we go to break, how can people find you, learn with you, your blog, website, how can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me, my website is victoriaferris.com. And I am not the best at social media with the exception of Instagram. I enjoy playing on Instagram, so you can find me at Dr. Victoria Ferris on Instagram also.
Well, when we come back, we'll continue the conversation with Dr. Victoria Ferris. As always, on the radio show website, you can get access to a couple of my now open source courses on facilitating white accountability groups, navigating difficult situations, all my books, Kathy O'Bear, Center for Transformation Change. We will be back in a few minutes.
Form a thought and it would manifest. The harmony was forgotten, but it is returning now. The Power of Inspiration and Awakening Radio with Julia Griffin on TransformationTalkRadio.com each second and fourth Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific will take you on a adventure through the heart and spirit, exploring who we once were. These intuitive healers studied under the guidance of wolves learn from their wisdom to master a higher frequency for a new state of mind. Visit OneTrueSelf.com.
Not just talk, conversation or profound self-awareness. Stick with us. Your best life awaits. InformationTalkRadio.com.
Thank you for coming back. I'm Dr. Kathy O'Bear here with the wonderful Dr. Victoria Farris, Farris Consulting, and that's F-A-R-R-I-S, in case you're still trying to find her on the website. We left off beginning to look much more at the work whites we need to do internally, and that might be folks that are multiracial, biracial, with white as ancestry, in my opinion, folks that might claim white, Latina, really anyone who has absorbed some of the beliefs of whiteness, white supremacy culture, racism, that wants with the groups of whites to do that healing work. At least that's how I do white accountability groups. Would you talk more about how you work with whites? Because a year and a half ago, I had some clients that wanted to start mixed race, and that had been the work I'd been doing, partnering. And there was something about the moment in time. I don't know if it was just pre-pandemic. I don't know what it was. We were in the middle of 45. But at least the whites in the group were not ready, prepared, had not demonstrated their skills, capacity. They weren't willing to listen. They were still real defensive and fragile. So I have moved to doing parallel work, white accountability and BIPOC affinity. So what do? What do you recommend? And if you do the white work, what's some of that white accountability group work you do?
Yeah. I think you're making an important point, Kathy, because I think I find white people are very resistant to working in white women's spaces. It's like when I'm like, we're going to get into a caucus, it's like, right? But hold up. Because I think it feels counterintuitive. It feels like, and I lately I've been hearing this wheel city of, I'm not the one to do this. You know, but I don't know how to do it. I'm not that suited, but also I'm not going to get up and leave the table and give up my space to somebody who is best suited. And it feels like another sort of manifestation of the self-indulgent way that we want to feel like good white people, like we're doing the thing, but I don't want to do it. I don't want to speak over. And don't get me wrong. I think it is really hard to navigate. There are so many conflicting messages, right? I said you need to center and follow and listen to. And if you're in an organization where you're like, well, the highest level person of color in this group is an assistant director, right, or a manager, not a vice president, then how do we do that? And I'm not saying you should ask that person without any compensation to lead you all. But what I think then has to happen is what you're talking about, where we as white folks engage with each other in truth-telling, in disrupting, in honest accountability about why is this table filled with only white people or other sort of white adjacent folks of color, right? I think you made an important point about, I think there are distinctions between and nuance within anti-Black racism and racism overall, and I think we really have to have a reckoning with anti-Blackness. Because I think a lot of organizations have elevated other people of color while upholding lots of anti-Blackness, and that is also not what equity looks like. So I think that simultaneous work is really important because, again, I think when we wrap before the break, I was saying folks are saying, I did this. I went through the listening sessions. I shared my stories, and nothing has changed. And that actually feels even worse than when I just sat here and kept it to myself because I put my trauma on display. And I hear folks call that trauma porn. I hear folks call it like voyeurism, where white people want to hear it and watch the videos that circulate online and then not actually do anything about it. And I think we have to be honest about the way that that reinforces harm. And so I think this goes back to there's no one right way to do it. And so maybe the best work you can do within your organization is white accountability work. To get your senior leadership, to get your organization to really be in a place where you can center and follow the leadership of people of color. Because the other trend that is happening is we're elevating all of a sudden, we're hiring a black woman into a senior vice president position when the organization is not in any way interested or capable of following her leadership and supporting her leadership. And then she fails, and then we have an argument as to why it didn't work, so we don't need to do it again. There's actually a critic called the glass cliff. I think we talked about that recently, right? It's a phenomenon that's being written about is happening so frequently. And elevating one person into a senior level diversity and equity position is also not what meaningful inclusion and equity and change looks like. Having a guide is important and valuable, and one person can't change a culture of an organization. So one of the things you've heard me say about systemic change requires systemic response, or systemic issues require systemic response, right? If we have systemic issues societally, in our local communities, in our organizations, we need to think about structural and systemic responses to it. And one person is not a structural response, right? A grappling with policy, a grappling with culture. One of the workshops that I often do about is about how whiteness shows up at work, because the way I say it in a nutshell is I spent my entire career feeling incredibly comfortable in every workplace I've ever worked at. And what I now understand is the more comfortable I felt at work, the more steeped in whiteness the culture was. Where we ate food that I was familiar with at, staff gatherings. We went to places that I felt invited and included at, restaurants and social events. We made decisions in ways that connected with me. I worked with people who had similar interests with me, right? And the time that I worked on the most diverse, there was a time I was the only white person on the team. And I was constantly like, I don't know what that means, or what's this, or what's that. And it was wildly uncomfortable. I would be lying to pretend anything other. It was the most uncomfortable I have ever felt at work consistently. And that's what equity looks like, right? White comfort has to be disrupted if we're really looking at cultural and systemic change. And I think that that's where it goes back to the healing stuff, because I think our capacity for discomfort and our ability to parse out the difference between feeling uncomfortable and feeling vulnerable versus feeling unsafe and targeted, those messages get really clogged, especially when we're not aware of our bodies and the sensations in our bodies and those like deep subconscious responses. And so to me, that's where healing comes in. You know, navigating, losing my mom and personal things has expanded my capacity for difficult and uncomfortable situations and for vulnerability in ways that I didn't know would become essential to my work as a white accomplice and ally. But I think that that's where those two things come back together. And I think that when white people sit with other white people and in accountability spaces and talk about, this is uncomfortable. I know it's uncomfortable. I see you. You see me. How do we grow together? How do we support each other? That can be powerful transformational work. And I think we have to get over the idea that if it's not happening with people of color, that means it's wrong. Because if we're not trustworthy, then we're causing more harm. And I think if we center harm reduction over what we think is supposed to feel and look like, we find a different path.
So powerful, centering harm reduction, and I hear white folks say, this is harmful to me, and it's like, actually, this is healing. To recognize racist attitude, white supremacy beliefs that are in you, but honestly disrupt them, shift, you can reclaim your humanity, as you said, and actually partner with. So accountability, Most white folks I know are not going to do this. I talk about getting within the line of supervision so that from the very top all the way down, we have clear expectations that's built to the performance appraisals. What do you talk about around accountability, and how are you helping organizations not have the blocks split? And folks haven't heard Angel Howard. That was last month, really talking powerfully as well. What are some ways that you see systems changing to increase the capacity, competency, not a nice thing to do, but it's a business outcome that you're required to do?
That's such a tricky question. Most of my work has been in higher ed until the last year. And what I will say is working outside of higher ed has shifted my understanding of what change is possible. Because I worked with a Fortune 500 company that in one quarter shifted 25% of their C-suite intentionally by racial demographics and in one quarter, so in 3 months.
Wow.
And when I saw that, it increased my frustration profoundly because it showed me what is actually possible. And I think part of what accountability looks like is this. Is naming stuff like this. And I think having been in higher ed for so long, we're really self-righteous in this belief that the way we do things is, and I'm like, if there was ever an opportunity for folks to embody change and be innovative and create something new, it was a year and a half ago. And I quite frankly, I think higher ed as a whole missed the mark. I think we really applauded ourselves because we were able to have professors switch to Zoom as like saving everything and being innovative. And I'm like, and I don't mean to minimize that. Professors have worked their asses off and it hasn't been easy. And that's not structural change, right? That's making sure that you can still collect your tuition money and students are still getting access to classes. But this was an opportunity to rethink who we serve, how we serve, why we serve, what we serve, and what we stand for. And I think, again, to me, what the truth looks like, what accountability looks like is being able to say, at this point, our unwillingness to change is a decision. And it is an active decision on a personal level, on a societal level, on a systems level, on a department level, any and all of those. You know, I said this recently that my unwillingness to name police violence against Black and Brown and Indigenous people as anything short of systemic state-sanctioned violence was willful ignorance. Because it felt good for me to think of it as individual acts of violence as opposed to a system that is funded by me and my tax dollars to create a culture of fear and terror, right? And I think that we have to start to name these truths, what's really happening, the decisions we're not making, the actions we're not taking. And I think that's part of the truth-telling that I think people are reluctant to want to do, because then I'm like, well, what does that mean about me? And that's where the healing part comes back in. So much of my healing has been about, you know, am I still enough? Am I a good person? But you know what? Like, the only person who decides whether I'm a good person or not is me and my conscience and whatever I believe in spiritually. It is not the responsibility of any Black or Brown person to decide I'm good. That is violence. And I think that, so the work I've been doing has shifted. Just even in the last couple of months, I have had more inquiries for coaching, particularly from senior-level white women, than I have in a long time. And I think it's because of this reckoning where folks are seeing, like, that we need these commitments and we're trying to do these things, and I know this stuff and I'm spinning my wheels because I don't know how to integrate what I've learned and integrate what I hear. And I think that the integration phase is the hard part, because that is where the rubber meets the road, is where we have to change ourselves and we have to change collectively to really start to do, you know, you do this with your hand often, where we do this, where we bring together in new ways. And quite frankly, it's work that I'm excited to do, because I think that wonderful work happens in a big room when we're doing education. A lot of what I do is foundational, really making sense of how racism is not just interpersonal, it is systemic, how we are all complicit in it and how we're all participating. I do a lot of that in partnership because I don't feel like I can ever be an expert in the impacts of racism. And I'm studying whiteness and I have been socialized into whiteness. And so we partner, my colleague often talks about race and racism. I talk about whiteness and allyship. And then we kind of work together on what does this look like moving forward. And I think it's when those questions start to get asked and we have to start to swirl, that's when white accountability becomes so critical. Because if I'm swirling and I don't have anywhere to land, I'm going to go back to the safety of what I knew, which is to pretend I didn't hear any of those things in that 3 hour session. But if I can swirl and I can reach out to you, Kathy, and say, like, this came up and I am feeling all kinds of things because of this with my parents or this or whatever, and you can say, me too. That's where the magic happens, I think.
Do that healing work, and then now let's look at the peril in the organization. Because I want people to be clear. When you said white people looking to folks of color to tell us we're good, and you said it was violence, you weren't saying folks of color withholding approval is violence. You were saying we demanding of people of color for us to let them into the circle of power. Just one tiny step, we are committing violence by demanding they do what we want, say what we want.
And that's like another byproduct of the system. I think especially, I was socialized as a feminine girl, white woman. And I was taught from the youngest age to outsource my validation. If I could just be perfect and create harmony, then I was told that I was a good girl, I was doing good, I got straight A's, I got in. And I think that's to me where they're feeling something, because that is a deep, deep, deep rooted lack of self-trust and lack of self-agency that then manifests when I'm at work and I've been socialized my whole life to need that validation to know that I'm good, but then I'm putting that on my supervisor, my colleagues, my peers. And when it's other white women, maybe we do that in really probably not healthy ways, but we do that for each other and the harm, the impact is different. But when I'm doing that to colleagues of color or colleagues of other marginalized identities where I have privilege, that creates a really harmful dynamic. And underneath it all, though, is shouldn't we all know our own inherent worth without needing to outsource it? And I think that's where the healing comes in.
And know that when we're silent and colluding, that's ours to sit with and then change, because that senior white woman leader who stays silent, as opposed to, you also have said, allyship has consequences. You said that senior white woman leader, white male leader, white trans leader who says, if we move in this decision to hire this person, we are not living into our commitment to dismantling racism. Mm-hmm. And the last 8 people we have hired, only one has been a person of color. And so I want to be very clear. While who you want to hire has some competence, the person that I think is the most competent and the most person we need for many reasons, if you go against that, we are going against our core values, and this will have systemic repercussions. Mm-hmm. To say that clearly in the C-suite, which means the top leadership for higher ed folks, puts that white person's career on the line.
Mm-hmm.
Because they may stay in that job, but they could be moved out. But the truth is, if someone else agrees and if you've done your work beforehand so you're not the only person, that is standing up leadership, change agent, the kind of courage, bravery that's needed. As we just close out, any final thoughts, reflections, hopes for leaders, hopes for folks that maybe don't have the positional power but want to be a partner in change?
Mm-hmm. I'm lingering on the allyship has consequences because that's a place that I do at my own self-check pretty regularly. Like what have the consequences been recently? And if they're not there, I often say, like, if you're not experiencing any consequences, you're likely not actually engaging in allyship in the way that you might think you are. And that sounds, this goes back to my rose-colored glasses, but the flip side of that is what comes with community and being an accomplice and being intertwined in a struggle where you're willing to put things on the line with and for one another is the most profoundly beautiful thing I've ever experienced in my life. And so I was hearing you say it, I'm like, I shouldn't say one without the other. Allyship has consequences. And on the other side there is such opportunity for what our world could look like, because it is also exhausting to carry around the mask of white supremacy. It is exhausting to pretend I know everything all the time, that I'm dominant all the time, that I'm not insecure. It is exhausting to put myself in competition with people all the time. And that's all a choice. And so I do think we have to get honest about the consequences. I think that looks like consequences at work, to your point. I think it looks like consequences with family, where maybe, I mean, every time there's a family dinner, somebody in my family calls me and tries to tell me that I should play nice at the dinner table. And every time I remind them that, like, I'm not, and if you don't want me to come, and nobody's ever actually uninvited me. And I've been moved off of committees and quietly not invited to lunches and dinner parties. And it looks like families, like my kids have been at protests, my kids have been in spaces, and my kids have sat on their iPad for 2 hours while I made calls for something or went to a training or a workshop. And I think, you know, I think we need to think about consequences across our lives. That, you know, I think my kids are better for it. And the way that I raise them looks different because of the ways that I want to be in the world. You know, I was just at an event, a school event yesterday, and I go through who are the people who are my Facebook friends, because they're the ones who know. And, you know, are they going to say hi to me at this thing, or are they not? And those are some of the consequences, right? So, and like I said, I think the opportunity that we could live in a world where there is meaningful connection and joy and community and liberation is so beautiful. It is worth every consequence imaginable.
And you're balancing that with a liberation and healing. Last week I developed a new handout. You were one of, I think, five other white folks I sent it to. And so the community of white change agents, colleagues who will tell me the truth, friends, as well as colleagues of color, who will partner with, just, I'm a different person the more I do my inner healing work, the more I show up in partnership, the more I go out on a limb and say, here's what's next, white people. Oh, what's next for you? How can people be working with you?
You just did that big breath, and you made me think about how you're the person who taught me how to breathe and planted that seed about connection. I think what's next, I think collectively what's next is that, it's breath, it's connecting, it's reducing this barrier that we have in our necks that tries to keep our heads divorced from the rest of our bodies. I think what's next is breathing into what the truth really looks like and what we do about it. I think the more people, vulnerability is contagious, so is courage. I think the more white people who are willing to go out on a limb and say things like, this is in my DNA, my family is responsible for so much violence, and here's what how I wrestle with that, right? I think then it gives somebody else permission to do the same, and I think we can be a little bit like the match in that and doing that together. And so I invite folks who are thinking, like, what's next, to start being brave and talking more and knowing that you might, I mean, regularly someone's like, why did you say it like this? Or you really coddled the white folks in that conversation. And I'm like, thank you, because that's what accountability looks like, and it's an investment. And so I think your point about having folks who will do that with you and for you and together is so important. But I think unpacking ideas of right and wrong, and that there's one right way to do any of this, is really important. I am super excited about the blending of healing modalities and healing work and coaching with bringing an equity lens and an equity mindset to things. I just opened up more opportunities for one-on-one coaching through the summer for leaders who are looking to do integration. And not everyone has access financially, time-wise. And so I have created a kind of a membership group that will be what I hope is a really accessible entry point, price point, time commitment. But for folks who want to be in community, for community learning, for accountability, for some healing, for integration, and for, I think, momentum, continuing to, like, what are we doing, a regular check-in. You can find information on my website about both of those things, but those are some of the things I've been doing, and, of course, the workshops and the organizational change work is always so exciting to me. It is so fun to get to travel virtually these days, but to get to be with different folks and see how different groups are approaching similar problems in different ways, I think it's just exciting and cool. So all of those are things that I'm doing these days.
So exciting. I want people to know, in addition, this actually today is going out an email, so if you're on my mailing list, you'll learn about summer curriculum. I went through and found 12 webinars that I'm now making available to every couple weeks. I couldn't get it to one. Because what I'm realizing is so many people exhausted, particularly indigenous and folk people, and some white folk, and maybe many white folks given pandemic. And so how do we rest, heal, while we keep momentum?
Mm-hmm.
Free resources, so I have lots more free resources on my website, drkathybaird.com/resources/events. As we close, hopes, if you could wave a magic wand, what would your dreams and hopes be for all the white leaders in higher ed, nonprofits, corporate America, K-12, folks that are in criminal justice system, if you call it that, I could keep going. Government, what are your hopes for white folks in this moment in time? What's possible?
You know, that's such a complex question. When I think, the first thing I thought of when you asked me hope is my kids and kids. You know, I heard my kids, the beauty of Zoom school is you get to hear things. I get to hear things I wouldn't normally hear. And I heard my kids say something about genders and colors. Like, genders don't mean colors, or colors aren't tied to gender. And just because a parent puts a kid in a certain color doesn't have to mean anything. People get to decide who they are and how they are. And I just, you know, I'm a 9-year-old, and I think that I get hope from knowing that it's possible, because what I see is that if we give each other permission to think differently, it's possible. My hope is that it doesn't have to be the next generation that does that, that we can recognize that it's a little harder for an old dog to learn new tricks, but it's not impossible. And we can learn so much from listening to people that we've been told are supposed to listen to us. Mm-hmm. And that's kids, that's people, you know, people of color, indigenous folks. But I think my hope is that people will breathe and realize that we don't have to experience the world behind a coat of armor. It can be different. We just have to be willing to take the first step and, like, imagine that and let it be.
And let it be and be different. Dr. Victoria Ferris, drvictoriaferris.com. Is that right?
VictoriaFerris.com.
VictoriaFerris.com. Thank you so much. I wish you and your kids and all the best. I'm Dr. Kathy Hebert, Center for Transformation and Change Radio. We'll see you all next month. Take care.
You've been listening to Dr. Kathy Hebert on Transformation Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to catch us next time as Kathy inspires listeners to become agents of change, motivate, innovate, and speak truth to power. Step into the courageous you that will change the world. Connect to life-changing conversations to extend your reach. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyhebert.com. That's drkathyhebert.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Wednesday to you. Benny Mathos here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for around the town. Good thing, folks. So far, no major blocking or accidents to report at the moment. Still a little bit, looks like slowing on I-5 northbound. Still just before the West Seattle Bridge around Albarelle Place and Michigan Street exit. Heavy up in downtown Seattle. Good thing. Brakes free after those days. Downtown Seattle exit, especially after yesterday's way. 405 northbound is still heavy around, looks like Park Drive, and 900 up through the Kennedale Hill. But that's okay. Stay tuned, because coming up next, after the news and weather, is another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network, the Dr. Pat Show Talk Radio for Thrive By. And what does it mean to be ready? Well, we have a special guest Our team ended to spread off.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. Tropical Storm Elsa is making landfall in Florida. Experts say the center of the storm came ashore along the North Florida Gulf Coast just southeast of Tallahassee. Elsa has winds of up to 65 miles per hour, and forecasters expect it to move further across Florida this afternoon. The death toll is continuing to rise at the South Florida condo collapse. Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava said today 10 more bodies have been recovered, bringing the death toll to 46. The mayor added 32 of the victims have been identified. Former President Trump is suing Facebook, Twitter, and Google over his account suspensions. Trump said big tech has become enforcers of unconstitutional censorship, and he's demanding prompt restoration of all of his accounts. The former president was banned from the platforms after he posted content encouraging rioters at the U.S. Capitol on January 6. A judge is rejecting an attempt to stop parts of Georgia's controversial voting law. Sarah Bartlett has the story.
The lawsuit brought by the group Coalition for Good Government opposed new requirements that voters request absentee ballots at least 11 days before Election Day and also opposed new rules on election observers. The judge cited ongoing runoff elections in the state and said he wouldn't change the law in the ninth inning. The Justice Department is currently suing the state over its election law.
Dallas is marking the fifth anniversary of a shooting which left five police officers dead. Dallas Police Chief Eddie Garcia told family members at a memorial ceremony this morning the officers would always be remembered.
I understand with a whole your heart that's never going to be filled. And for that, my heart goes out to each and every one of you. But please know this, that your husband, your son, your brother, your dad died at zero because he was unafraid of the darkness.
Garcia also noted the killings were a heavy burden on the city and police department. The officers were killed by a sniper following a peaceful march against police brutality. The shooter was later killed during a standoff with police. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
I'm Ryan Seacrest. First responders are people who stand for a greater purpose. They will be there for you when nobody else is, to help you, your family, your community. This is their selfless promise. This is their sworn duty, to protect, to serve, to help. When you call 911, first responders show up now. Let's show up for the people who show up for us every day and every night.
Go to firstrcf.org. Make a difference today.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat McPhilly and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next to you.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey, everybody, welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on for this very cool 11 o'clock hour. I am so thrilled to be with all of you. Martine Emmons is joining me here today. And let me just tell you a little bit about Martine. And she's like, yay!
I am so excited.
I am excited to have you. One of the things that I want to say, and you're going to hear more about who she is and what she does. Look, when your life takes some turns and some twists and you have a traumatic event in it, we are faced with choices. We really are. All of us are. Many of us may go through and have more of these than others, but we're at that point where we are faced with our emotional response to things. And today you're not going to just hear about what this means for her and what Martine does to help other people. But the real question is this. What does it mean to be ready? You know, here's the thing. Not too long ago, I was introduced to a game called Texas Hold'em. Now, and in Joseph Maggio's garage, he had every gambling game, and I'm talking like 7 or 8 years old.
Oh, wow.
You can imagine. But he didn't have Texas Hold'em. And so this Texas Hold'em game, do you mind saying that right, Benny? Texas Hold'em. It's a poker game, but there's a thing in it, right, Benny, where they say, somebody says all in.
Yeah.
The question is, what does it mean to be ready? But what does it mean to be ready and all in? Martine, thank you for this conversation, because this is an energy. Being ready is an energy. What does the energy of ready mean to you?
You know, I don't think any of us are ever really ready. We just got to dive in, and we have to be all in. We have to be all in with our purpose and our passion. And I remember a colleague of mine, it was actually husband and wife team, and the wife, she would always tell them, like, will you stop getting ready to get ready? Let's go, you know? And they are multimillionaires. They've jumped in every opportunity. She may have jumped a little quicker than him, but they jump into every opportunity. And I think now is the time, especially for us women. We have got to get going. There is no fooling around. There's always going to be something that's going to come in to stop us. I've got a little health thing that we could talk about or not. It just happened recently, and it's like,
go for it.
Talk about it, you mean?
Sure.
Well, I don't know how it started or what it started, but it's defeating. Like, you know, there's these like white patches that have come on my body. And I don't know what they're from. I don't know if it's the sun. I don't know if it's some a medication that was prescribed to me. I don't know. But I started looking in the mirror and going, oh, my gosh,
yeah.
I am looking much older than my age. I have these spots on my hands, some on my face.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, my Lord, please. Because it has taken me years to like myself, you know, to be comfortable, right, in your own skin. Especially us as women, there's this culture that we have to be so perfect everything. And not just perfect in our physical self, but life's just going to be awesome. And we've just got to be positive all the time and rocking all the time. And it's like, come on, this isn't real. But this happening recently over the last couple months, I thought it was just something like, hey, stay out of the sun. And honestly, I don't know what it is. I'll find out on Thursday. But it's freaking scary. But is it going to stop me? No.
Right.
I did think about calling you and saying, you know what, I don't want to do this. I thought about putting some things off, and I'm like, no.
Tonight, Martinet, you know, first of all, I love your courage, and I love your vulnerability. That's why you are as successful as you are. That's why people come to you for help, come to you for guidance. What we're talking about here is it is at the point of our most vulnerable selves, do we become most authentic and relatable? You know, I mean, I went through most of my life, unapproachable.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had such crust, Benny. I was so crusted over. I didn't want anybody to see my pain.
Right.
You know, the death of my mom. You know, being homeless, you know, just so many things. You know, by the time I was 21, I thought, is this all there is? I mean, seriously, why? Do you know why I made it to my 21st birthday? Just saying a little bit about my history and my family history.
Yes.
Do you know why I made it to my 21st birthday?
Right.
You could drink.
Mm.
Now, mind you, I had 3 other fake licenses. Uh-oh, is this live on air, Benny? Do we have to bleep that out? They're not going to get me. That is so long ago. The statute of limitations is so over for that. But here's why you and I are here today. 6 months. When I signed on for this in 2003,
mm-hmm.
I was so ready that I answered a wrong phone number and I paid $10,000 for 13 weeks. One day a week of internet-only radio in 2003. And I've shared that story with you.
Mm-hmm.
That is a real story.
Mm-hmm.
My friends were like, you have lost your mind. And I have just created Crust Busting. So here's the question.
Right.
You know why we are so passionate about who we are and how to help other people. Our listeners, I get fired up every day. Mm-hmm. People say to me, you can't, somebody heard me say to Benny, 18 years, you know, it doesn't matter if it's 18 years or 18 minutes. Every show is new to me.
Right.
But here's the question for you today. Sharing that, showing up today,
mm-hmm.
what's firing you up today, Mark and A? What is firing you up?
Hope. Hope is firing me up. Hope, because I believe that there's absolutely nothing you can't get up from. I'm proof of that. And, you know, I started out my life with physical abuse, sexually abused from age 4 to 9, 3 different men, one being a cop, somebody you're supposed to be able to trust. And I know that no matter what, there's always, maybe, I mean, I might be a little different, of course, but there's always this little glimmer of hope. And I always saw a light. I always saw a light, just like the pretty light behind you. There was always some kind of light for me that I knew that, you know what, there is going to be something more. Even on those days when you feel like, gosh, can I do this without, you know, like getting to your 21st birthday without a drink or without something, can I do this? Yes, you can, because there is something there. You were created for something big. You were created for something. You may not even know, not know what it is right now. It's okay to sit back mm-hmm. for a moment. It's okay to sit with yourself and ask yourself questions. It's okay to park, as Maya Angelou says or said at one time. You can park for a little bit, but then you've got to get yourself back up. You've got to dust yourself off and go, because your life is waiting for you. A big life that you can't even imagine if you just take a chance on yourself.
Yeah. You know, I was looking at the show, and I knew you and I would be doing this show. And thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I mean, the punchline to what I began to talk about mm-hmm. busting, and it became a metaphor. And, you know, I said to the listeners, stay tuned. Once we open up our channels, we're going to have a press busting hour. It was the funnest thing in the world. I mean, and I had some of the most incredible people as guests who still mm-hmm. thought it was fun. I mean, to hear Deepak Chopra say in the Deepak Chopra voice, cross busting. I mean, I can't even do an imitation of him. I got to find it.
That's good.
I got to find it. But 6 months, I came down with a mystery disease. And here's what I now know about this. I had never really been sick in my life. I mean, I was the pillar of just get out of shortstop. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
But my mentor said to me in 1998, going to be able to take anyone to a place you haven't gone yourself. And I remember looking at the film there. I remember saying to her, you got to be kidding. My wife, she said, you know, one day you'll understand the meaning. But here's mm-hmm. my question for you. These things want us to stop getting ready.
Mm-hmm.
They want us to stop being ready.
Right.
They want us to not even consider ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to ask you about this, because we've been given gifts.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you about what we need to know, even though we're maskless today in the world,
mm-hmm.
what do we need to know to move full steam ahead? And you know what I'm struck by? I don't know what I'm going to do about it. I'm just struck by this young woman, this young lady for marijuana,
mm-hmm.
a performance-enhancing drug. I was not going to be in the Olympics. And I just thought to myself for a minute, what does that even feel like, Martinet? How do we keep going after your situation, after what I talked about? How do we just stay full steam ahead?
It sounds cliche to say your why, but it is a why. I cannot believe that any of us were meant for this mediocre life. get up in the morning, get the kids ready for school, take your shower, whatever it is, get yourself to work, do your job, come home, make dinner, watch a little TV and go to bed. I can't believe that that's what life's about. And I can't believe that some of these big things that happen, that have happened to you and me and so many others, that it's not for a reason. It has to be. And when we learn when we learn the most, it's duties of at these times of adversity, of challenge, of being knocked down to the floor. That's when we learn of what we're capable of. And if our life was just simple, if our life was just without any type of challenges, we wouldn't learn. We wouldn't be able to get to these points. So if we can just take a hold and look at these things that have happened and what blessings can we find in these lessons? What blessings can we find from these, as my coach will call it, sacred teachers? Mm-hmm. We can't hate the lessons and say, and we can't hate the person who brought us these lessons,
mm-hmm.
and still have a gratitude and find the blessings in them if we hate them or the situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's just remembering our truth. It's tuning inside and figuring, what did I learn from this? I think about that a lot with my dad. Both my siblings have passed away. My mom's passed away, and I wonder a lot of times, why is it just me and my dad when we have such a tumultuous relationship? Well, there's a lesson there. I haven't completely figured it out yet, but I know enough now to really look at that. There's something for both of us. I don't know what he's going to do at 85 anymore, but I know I'm going to use everything that I've gotten from him in my past, the abuse of him in my past, to the things that he's taught me now that I can serve and help others.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we go through is to serve and help others with. It makes us relatable,
mm-hmm.
like we talked about.
Yeah.
I remember going through a miscarriage thinking, God, I don't want to learn this one. I don't want to know about this. No, not for me. Right when I was in the throes of it. No, yeah. I don't want to. I've learned enough now. No more of this, please. Suffered enough. But I am relatable to people. I can relate to that as well. I can relate to divorce. I can relate to a lot of different things because of what I went through.
You know what's interesting about it? I was thinking about this last night. I had a really late call from a friend of ours, and a really tough situation for a young woman. And I thought of myself as we were talking about her situation and what should she do and not do. And one of the things I was struck by is, where do I get that knowledge? I mean, where did I get the knowledge about how to help someone who is in a potentially abusive situation not do anything to harm herself? And, you know, it's really interesting. These life moments we have, these pivotal milestones we go through, they've now embedded at a cellular legacy ancestral perspective in you for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that, isn't part of that to share and to teach?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that part of it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think there's anything anybody's to have this amazing athlete participate. Even the White House's plea to please look at the doping rules.
Right.
Nothing you're going to be able to do. But I think as women, we're really struck by some dual standards in life.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, I don't want to sound like a victim, but I'm really facing the reality of looking at how a Michael Phelps gets caught in a picture smoking a joint and doesn't get suspended. And I think that part of this is we are given a resilience that goes beyond what we actually need in any given lifetime. How is the resilience in us? And I can already talk to women. I mean, one day we'll get the men on the show and we'll have a chat with them. Because I can't represent them. I can only represent what our experiences as women.
Mm-hmm.
But don't we build up sort of an extra muscle somewhere?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think we build it.
Today we were getting to talk about that extra muscle, and I think she bleeped out. Benny, let's go to a short break because I think she pumped up her muscle too big right there, or I pumped up my muscle too big. Can we take a short break, Mr. Benny and Olivia? We'll be right back. We're talking about pumping up your resilience muscle. Why do you need it, even if you don't think you do? Short break, everybody. We'll be right back.
welcome to Light Body Yoga with internationally known light body whisperer, Grace Holmes. She will make you laugh and yawn as you release lifetimes of trauma and begin to feel much lighter. Your divine gifts may be activated, allowing you to weave light into the fabric of the world. Are you ready to be your own light and shine? For more information about Grace, visit GraceGHome.com. That's GraceGHome.com. Take the power of essential oil healing to the next level with the Essential Light Insight Deck, containing 61 oracle cards. Each card holds a painting and message that captures the spirit of an essential oil. By drawing a card, you'll illuminate the spiritual healing capacity of plants and transform your day. For more information about the Essential Light Insight Deck and Gen Ripa, visit Thriveology.com.
Hi, this is Brittany Miles from Miles to Go, How to Lose to Gain It All. Here to share a tip with you. It's called 5-4-3-2-1. We all need a break. Time to let it go. Here's a great go-to when you need to surrender and get back to the present moment. Acknowledge 5 things you see around you. Acknowledge 4 things you can touch around you. Acknowledge 3 things you hear. Acknowledge 2 things you can smell. Acknowledge 1 thing you can taste. And with that, take a deep breath. Now you're in the present moment. 30 miles, miles to go, how to lose to gain it all. You can find me on the 2nd and 4th Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio.
Are you ready to shift your current beliefs about death? From debilitating pain and loss? Follow Angie Corbett-Kuiper as she shares that through choice, present moment awareness, and keeping an open mind. Anything is possible, even in death. Tune in to Beyond Proof Radio with Angie, redefining death and loss, every first Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more, visit BeyondProof.com.
Are you ready to let go of the I can't that are holding you down? Valerie Trujillo invites you to join her community on a mission to collectively heal as a tribe, where your vulnerability is heard and reciprocated. So tune in to Love and Light with the Crystal Blue Oracles every 2nd and 4th Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about Valerie and her work, visit CrystalBlueOracles.com.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharge phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today. Or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Everybody, it's me, psychic medium Jamie, and me, spirit walker Nicole. We are so excited to introduce you to our new live call-in show called Shades of Spirit on TransformationTalkRadio.com. As we connect you to our loved ones, angels, and guides, and also help you develop your own psychic and healing abilities. For more information and to book your own private experience, go to ShadesOfSpirit.com and also follow us on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Hey everybody, welcome back. It's so great to have all of you tuning in. So Martinet is joining me. Martinet, I'm joining me. Amens, right? Martinet, give me your last name, because I know that's right. I got your first name.
Emmons. I said it right the first time. But look, how do people find out more about you? Because they can go to your website, Martinet, right? Martinet, and it's
absolutely
M-O-N-S, right? So Martinet is the way I'm pronouncing it, and it's just let's get a hold of you to get some help on this issue, right?
Absolutely. I would love to help. Yeah. Anybody who's feeling discouraged, feeling hopeless, that they cannot rise back up from challenges in life, I am happy to be here for you. Just call and have a conversation with me. It's absolutely complimentary. And if you decide we're a good fit, then maybe we'll work together as well.
So I love this topic, but I've never loved it as much as I love it today.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
It's a wonderful topic, and it's so real. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk with you about this. And please, me, different questions these days. And one of the questions I get is, you know, Pat, you pretty much are staying under the radar. You've done that for about 6 years now. And I thought, wow, like six, really? And I didn't quite understand what they meant by that. But I've given it a lot of thought. And here's the question. We get these signs, Martinet. We get these symbols. Mm-hmm. When did you know you needed to do something more? When did you know you couldn't wait any longer to step into your purpose? Because I love when people ask me that question, and I realize that, you know, to a lot of folks, I'm under the radar compared to what I used to be out in the world. It doesn't mean I'm not on purpose, but when did you know you needed to really jack it up?
Cancer diagnosis. Never in a million years. It is so strange that my family, we've never had cancer in our family until my brother, age 17, got Hodgkin's. And then my sister got a strange cancer at age, I want to say 21, that usually doesn't happen until you're in your 60s, called polycythemia vera. Mm-hmm. And it was a manageable cancer. She just had to have white blood cells drawn occasionally, and she was, well, it's, I mean, I wouldn't say she's never been a perfectly healthy person. She's had struggles her whole life. But for the third child of my parents, when it's never been in my family at all, I thought, wow, it can't be. Even though when I went to the doctors, I knew full well I knew there was something wrong with me, and wasn't quite sure it would be cancer, but colon cancer to happen to me, and I'm one of the most modest people you'd ever meet. And for that to happen to me, it was absolutely humbling. And when my doctor said, I am so sorry, this is not what I expected at your age, kind of tuned out, and my husband took all the words and all that, and you know, and I just kind of was processing sitting in the chair. And I went home, and I thought, well, shoot, I am newly married. It's only been a year. I just lost my mom 2 months ago to dementia. And this is something. And then overnight, it's like, you know what? I've got young kids. I am not giving up, and now is the time. If there's ever a time to, you know, I had a good corporate job as a paralegal. It was great. However, I knew I was meant for something more. I knew all the times and everything that I've been through. And like you said, I don't want to sound like a victim, but I have had a lot of hard times and losses and challenges. And I thought, you know what? I can't wait any longer. Now is the time to serve others. Now is the time to glean all the lessons out of what has happened to me so I can serve others. And I knew I'd beat cancer, and I did. Anybody can get back up, even if you are given a diagnosis. You can get back up, and you can have faith and belief in yourself that you are meant to serve others, that you are meant to help others with your story. Mm-hmm. And I think sharing our stories gives others permission to share theirs.
Yeah. Look, this to me is one of the conversations that I would not choose to have with anyone else. You are perfect to have this conversation with Martinet because, you know, I'm thinking about sports analogy, if I could. There used to be, and Benny probably has to help me out with this. There used to be a show opener for a sports thing. And they would show these people, like, doing all sorts of sports. But the one I never forgot, and I was a bunch of years ago, was this skier dude. It was a dude. Mm-hmm. Coming down this, like, really long jumping ski thingamajiggy, right? Mm-hmm. It's like the ski jump, like the Olympic winter sport. You tucked yourself in, and you're coming down, and it's like you're going so fast. And then he's twirling around, and the tagline is the agony of defeat because he crashes. And it's so, I mean, I can't even tell you what the commercial was for. I know it was for some sports channel. But that stays in our mind. See, the agony of defeat stays with us.
Mm-hmm.
How can we help people today? I don't want to erase that. I don't want to erase anything in my life where I felt, and let me say it, defeated.
Mm-hmm.
But I might have been down, but I'm not out.
Right.
And that's my message for today, Martini. I mean, look at you showing up today. You know what I'm saying? Look, I got two knees replaced, and I couldn't wait to get back to doing shows, right?
Right, right.
But cancer and what you just shared, you might have been down for a minute, but boy, nobody counted you out, did they?
No, and that's the thing. You can't give up. You're going to be giving challenges. Even little things like us right now, right? My internet dies, but we get back in there and we do it. You can always, and you may need to sit for a little bit and get your bearings. You may need to sit a bit, tune into your heart and your soul. Talk to God if you believe in God. Talk to the universe, higher power, however you look at it. And get some courage from there. And also, one of the things that I always tell my clients is to keep a list of the things you have done. Keep a list of the things you have overcome. Because you know there's been a lot. Even if you're very young, you know there's been a lot that you've been through. Keep a record of that. That is your evidence. Collect evidence. And if you're feeling defeated or down about something, also keep a list of things that people have said about you. Keep that next to you. You know, I keep my master coach, he told me, you know, you are an amazing coach. I keep that near me for the times that I feel down or the times that I feel like, God, I am just not getting anywhere. My business isn't making it. I keep the time of the things that I've gone through that, well, hey, I made it through this, and why wouldn't I have success? There always is something to hold on to. And my gosh, reach out to someone. Reach out to your, you know how they say you are, have at least five people that you can go to or five people that you emulate or want to be like. Keep those people handy, not the ones that may put you down or tell you you can't do something. Keep those people that you're going to boost handy and give them a call. You know they'll be there for you.
I want to go to break, but I want to share something. In all the years that I've been doing this on my Seattle flagship station, KKNW AM FM, and also on WBLQ, shout out to Chris. Remember Chris Benny? I'm going to see Chris in a couple of weeks, right? Chris DePaulo.
Very cool.
Yeah. In all of the years I've been doing this, Eric Burris, Benny, in all the years from the minute I showed up, and walked into that station and had no idea. And I want to give a shout out to Casey Chung, who believed in me. And honestly, in all the years I've been doing this, not a single one of the producers, not the Benny, not the Erics, not the Casey, not Linda, who my best friend, not a single one of them said, I'm not sure you can do this, Pat. You don't really have any experience in this. Not a single one of them. Not a one. When we come back, Martine, the power of the people, the power of the people in our lives, the power of the people in your lives. You know, what is it about the reflection of how you see yourself today? When you look in that beautiful pool of water, what is it about yourself that we can help you with today so that maybe it's a rise-up day for you? Maybe it's a rise-up higher. Maybe it's just simply a sit-up day. 1-800-930-2819. We would love to give you an affirmation because today's show is all about the thing. And the thing that we're talking about is the muscle that you have. Body, mind, spirit, and fifth dimension. You've got it. When we come back, Martine and I will take a deeper look at why in the world of today, how has COVID-19 prepared all of us for a level of greatness that you can't even imagine, maybe can't even think about what I'm talking about. But what is it that has prepared us beyond ready? Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharge phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today. Or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Everybody, it's me, psychic medium Jamie, and me, spirit walker Nicole. We are so excited to introduce you to our new live call-in show called Shades of Spirit on TransformationTalkRadio.com. As we connect you with your crossover loved ones, angels, and guides, and also help you develop your own psychic and healing abilities. For more information and to book your own private experience, go to shadesofspirit.com and also follow us on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
How many times do you find yourself saying, it was nothing, or just doing my job, when really you knocked it out of the park? How did you get like this? Next time someone tells you, great job, you'll know how to accept it and not deflect it by listening to Courage to be Seen Radio with host Sherry Clark. Sherry Clark is an experienced global engineering leader, coach, and mentor. From her experiences one-on-one coaching to corporate consulting and executive coaching, Sherry has learned many women need at least three things to discover and stay success. Learn about the ACES program, how to survive male-dominated fields with grace and authenticity, and reach the top without ever once giving up on who you are. Courage to be Seen host Sherry Clark explores the awesome power of your entire self and how far you can go by being more you. Check out her website, CourageToBeSeen.com. You have the courage to be seen. See you later.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack, and I'm excited to tell you about the latest technology. It is new to this country, and it's just amazing. Out of Germany. The Healy is state-of-the-art technology for improving and changing the body vibration. I have more information about the Healy on my website, MaryJaneMack.com, or you can call the office at 888-777-4232.
Feeling stuck? Journey into a new exciting reality today. Join Coach Christine Clark as she helps you forge the life you desire through processes that shape, hone, refine, elasticize, and transform you. Go beyond the curve and call in your unique destiny. Tune into
to the show, Forging a Life, live every fourth Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. To work with Christine, visit SunglowTransformation.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. What does it mean to be ready? Marjane, before we dive deep into the realization I think that many of us had, about this is life. And we've seen loved ones pass. As a matter of fact, I'm going to a memorial next weekend. And, you know, we see life pass. But we've been given a dose of reality right now about life. Short, like don't mess today, as well as what does the journey mean to really step in, even if we don't know the details. Before we get into that, this is something you do and you help other people with. How do they find out more about you, and how do they connect with you?
Well, my website is www.martineemmon.com, M-A-R-T-I-N-E. EMMONS.com. My website is there where you can book a complimentary consultation. I do have one-on-one availability should we be a good fit, but I always like to get, you know, give everybody a hour and a half to get to know each other and see if we are a good fit. And I'm also on Facebook at Transformation with Martine. And, of course, I am so privileged to be with Transformational Talk Radio, where I have my own show, Transformation with Martine, the second and the fourth Fridays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. And, you can reach out to me even at my email, which is martine@martineemmons.com. Thank you, Dr. Pat.
I love it. And, you know, Benny, thank you so much for the fact-finding. Benny has just made us aware that it was ABC's Wide World of Sports. That's right. And it was a crash of jumper. Yeah, Vinko Bogotage, The Agony of Defeat. And 51 years ago, they started playing that. And they kept playing that that commercial or that scene. They played it for a really long time.
It was an intro to the show. It was all the good and the, you know, times of bad, so to speak, for the last little while.
Yeah, Benny, what do you think we remembered? I mean, I remember that dude, right? I mean, you know, I'm trying to think, what was the good? I'm sure there was good.
There's plenty.
But that's a really great opener, show opener. Thank you, Benny, for that. Martine, look, in the agony of defeat is one side of a coin. But we're now talking about, here we are. Everything we go through shows up in our lives for some preparation. I don't like to say for a reason. Yes, there's a reason. But it shows up for, I like to call it preparation. You know, it's like the time you would love to have to prepare your lunch the day before, right, to take to your office or take to where you're going. And here's the question. Have we gotten a dose of reality about how short life really is to enable us to really step in, get in the game, and get ready?
Yes. I think everything we go through is if we choose to accept it, right? If we choose to accept the challenge or however you want to call it, that it's time to get ready now. Even if you don't feel like it, even if things don't look perfect, we got to just jump in. Perfectly imperfect, we got to jump in. Because life is going to go on whether we choose to get off the couch and do something or not.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was sharing with you over break, we went on a kind of a bucket list trip to Martha's Vineyard last week. And I was amazed at just watching my 22-year-old daughter, who got married in September of last year, and her husband, and my 16-year-old son, my 20-year-old daughter, and just watching them for the people that they are now. And I remember people telling me, you know, so it seems like so long ago, but not. Enjoy those times because your kids are going to grow so fast. Your life is going to go by in a second. It does. If we don't step up now, we're going to lose that chance.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to go. And then, you know, they like what they always say when somebody has, like, they're on their last bit of life, and they say what they regret the most is not taking chances, not taking risks, not stepping out.
and doing their purpose because they were too afraid. But what's the worst thing that can happen? Someone tells you no? Or you have a few failures or you learn? What's the worst thing? Take that chance on you. Step out. Regret, I think, is a lot worse than that fear. Don't you think, Dr. Pat?
I think regret is so much worse because regret turns into resent. You know, we don't often talk about regret and resentment and regret in the same breath. And we actually need to because what happens with a regret, let's just say, is that we ruminate over woulda, coulda, shoulda, but didn't. And probably won't. You know, one of the things that I think we get to really walk and take the journey down is, and certainly this is part of my journey, is, you know, when you start to look at your life and one door shuts, like my corporate career did, right, you've got to be able to follow your heart, your intuition. But I will say this, you have to have a support system. Because
100%.
Had I not had a support system when I went through that experience, that downsizing, I don't think I would have been as prepared to even think about going back to school. Let's talk about preparation and what does it mean to have a support system of people. I have 5 coaches. They're different. They're all different. I need to be spiritually fed. So when I find that I'm really out of whack, that is the person I go to.
Right.
You need a financial coach. I need to email, you know, my bill and say, Bill, can I do dot, dot, dot? Like I emailed him and I said, you know, we're growing. We're going to have like a podcasting membership. Do I need a separate company? I don't know what I don't know. How do we get the support? How do we say I'm worthy to get myself a coach or support or a guide or something, right? I mean, you have one or two.
Oh, gosh, I do. I used to think, which you probably did too, it's not even just so much the unworthiness. It's like, oh, I can't afford that. I can't do that. But then, you know, you always find the money for your kids or you always find the money for some other thing. And I have a health coach. I have a financial coach. And I have my... Well, I guess you call her a personal coach. I need someone to keep me accountable. I need somebody who when I just need somebody to say, you know what, you're okay, you're good, you do a good job. Because our families, just like our own brains, right? They try to protect us. Like, oh, don't, you know, you're going to end up hurt or, you know, whatever. Our own brains tell us that. Not to mention some family members, some friends, they mean well. But we need people that are going to hold us accountable. It's their quote-unquote job to hold us accountable.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I know that my coaches generally do care about me. Just like the people that I have, that I coach myself, I love my clients. I am there for them whenever they need me. And I'm not saying, like, it, drop everything at a moment's notice, but I am there for them. I am there for them as soon as I possibly can be for them. We all need those advocates. We need those people that life's work is to help and serve others. We need it. I can't imagine not having a coach in my life, someone that's there for me to keep me going.
Yeah.
How about
it
you?
It took me a really long time, and I want to talk to this too, because we started out the show by you sharing something very vulnerable, and I really want to circle back on it. One of the hardest things that I think that happens for us, and I'm not sure if this is just women or it doesn't matter, but it's asking for help. And sometimes we actually think we have to have the right question before we can approach someone for help. How do we help our audience today know that they're worthy of asking any question that they have to get help?
You know, one of my coaches, I can't try to, it doesn't matter which one, right? She always says you're worthy because you are.
Yeah.
Because you were created. It doesn't matter. Anybody that's going to serve you well they're not going to matter what you're, it's not going to matter to them how your question is worded or for it to be perfect. They're just going to see you. If they're the right coach for you, they're going to see you. I know that the coach that I have actually had for many years now, she could see right through me, and that's why I knew she was for me. She scared me. We had to do this exercise in this, well, it was like a group training that we went to. You know, she's a coach, I'm a coach, and it was a group training, and we had to, which I think is one of the most scariest things, is to look into each other's eyes. We had to stand right in front of each other and look into each other's eyes for like three to 5 minutes.
Oh, I know, I've done that one.
So long, right? And I don't know, she could just hold the gaze, and our master coach was just saying, you know, you will probably feel like they're judging you. You may feel a lot of love from them. You may feel all these different things. And it's true, it brought up all this emotion. And she could just see through me. She told me, she goes, I know you weren't judging me. She goes, you know, what I felt was just love from you. And I felt that from her too. Yeah, she was probably 36. You know, we all judge to a certain level. But I knew that she was seeing me. And that's what I know with my clients. I see them. I have had people tell me that one person, she says, I'm no longer the shell of a person I was in working with you. There's nothing my heart for more than that. It sounds kind of crazy, but this makes my day. You know, we have to have those people behind us, the ones that love us no matter what. And I have a client, it's taken her a long time to stop saying, this may sound stupid, but there is nothing stupid. You come to me with anything. There's nothing stupid that you could ask me. You're not stupid.
Martinez, I want to bring us back to where we started, because I can't remember the last time I have felt the energy of readiness. Right? The energy of readiness. And some people call it a little impatient. Some people say I'm antsy. Some people say I'm stuck. You know, stuckness is a great, great sign of readiness. Do you agree with that? The idea of being stuck?
Yep. Means you're right on the brink of something good.
You're right on it. You're just right on the brink. And, you know, I wanted to ask you this question, right? Sometimes we don't understand things. And the hardest thing in the journey is to try to search meaning, or, as Sir Frankl says, man search for meaning. Try to search for the why in something that is outside of yourself. You know, why did the lightning decide to happen right now? Are we ever going to know? Right?
Yeah.
But we have to get past that why question. And getting ready is about moving to the what and the how. What is the best way we can share with people in this moment to release the why for a later time and move to the what and how?
Yeah, you know, it's almost like the, you know, Mike Dooley and the universe, thoughts from the universe.
Yeah.
You familiar with that? Yeah.
I get his emails every day. I get those universe things every day.
Yeah, me too. And no, it's just like, don't worry about the dreaded hows. Just take a chance. Go for it. You know, it doesn't matter if it is perfect. And like the storm happening, you know, you got to keep going anyway. It reminds me of a scene where Beyonce was singing, and she had a fan that was behind her, and her hair kept getting caught in it.
Yeah.
And she was very graceful. She just kept just singing like nothing happened, and just kept pulling her hair from there until, you know, the producers or whatever fixed it. But she was just grateful, and she just kept going because she knew she needed to. And that was the same with the show. I wasn't sure what to do, but I knew you guys would get a hold of me and we'd work it out.
Yeah.
I was calm. The old me would not have been. I would have been in a panic. Not anymore. I know that I got to just take the steps. And it might be on some days just a tiniest little step. But if we can just take that one step, another door will open. Yeah. Another person may come into your life. Another sacred teacher may come into your life. We get to just be willing to take that step.
Mm. Martine, thank you so very much for today. If you don't mind taking a few minutes again, letting people know about your show, also how they can contact you, and, you know, your personal message, what do you want to leave us with today? Please, thank you so much for joining me here today. Lightning bolt and all.
Yes, lightning bolt and all. I'm so privileged and honored, Dr. Pat, to be not only on your show today, but just to be working with you in general. I think you're phenomenal. And I'm grateful to be part of Transformational Talk Radio. My show is Transformation with Martine. It runs every second and fourth Friday of the month at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. And my website is www.martineemmons.com, martineemmons.com. And reach out to me by either email at martine@martineemmons.com, or you can private message me on Facebook or Instagram. And I just want to leave everybody today with part of how we started today, which is there's hope. There's always hope. There's nothing you can't get up from. And not only am I proof of that, but Dr. Pat is proof of that. And so many people that I have worked with are proof of that. You can get back up. It may not be pretty. It may not feel good, but you can get back up. And if I can ever be of service to you, please reach out to me. And I thank you so much, Dr. Pat.
Martine, thank you so much for everything you're doing. Olivia, thank you for stepping in here. Benny, thank you for just being right on the spot of making things happen. And I want to just thank all of you. This is the best audience on the planet. You have been here for each other and for us and for this message. And we so thank you. And I promise you, very soon, we were going to make good on what we've promised to give you. Last four, and then some. Thank you all. Stay tuned for another hour coming up on Transformation Talk Radio. We'll see you next.
Expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program, and not KKNW. This is...